Welcome, reanimated fans, to this week's episode. I'm H.A. Conrad, here with my intrepid and awesome co-host, Stuart Tiffin. Hello, Stuart.
Just being awesome.
How are you this fine day?
Super duper.
Sweet.
Dude, it's been a day. Let me just tell you, H.A. I just got back 20 minutes ago from a 6-year-old birthday party at a place called Epicenter, which, if you can hear the emotion in my voice, lots of sugar, lots of kids, there were trampolines involved, bright lights, clowns, thank goodness.
Were you overstimulated? Sounds like you were overstimulated.
I was overstimulated, let alone the 6-year-olds. Yeah, it was. So if I sound a little bit like I've got some post-traumatic stress this episode, that's why.
Well, I am returning from a massive Greek wedding, which was awesome, but epic and never ending. Like, it was sort of event after event. There was a lot of food. There was a lot of dancing. The one of the highlights of this particular wedding is that there was like this roving saxophone player that played for almost every single song, but kind of like follow everybody around the dance floor. It was amazing. And then it
like
was
Kenny G style.
Like, it was just weird. I was like, I didn't know there were that many songs that you could really work the sax into, but it was pretty much every single one, and it was amazing.
That's a skill.
I got a photo with him, or I kind of, like, made him photobomb a photo with me, so I'll send it to you a little later. I know you're excited to see it. But it wrapped up with this insane brunch today and made it back in time and happy. Also, it was a little overstimulated, so I'm pretty psyched to be talking with you right now.
Terrific.
But for our listeners, we have a few things to talk about today. We have some news items, and then we're going to jump into our review of Zombieland Double Tap. But before we get to that, we got a great email from somebody who just recently discovered the podcast, Kevin, who had some really great suggestions, a couple of reading suggestions that I'm definitely going to look into. But we appreciate your thoughts and definitely hope that you check out the Train to Busan review that we did a while back, but I couldn't quite remember off the top of my head how far back that was.
That was 118. I actually have gone back and, not to sound, conceited, but I went back and re-listened to it just to be like, what did we think of Train to Busan? Oh, yeah, we loved it.
Yeah, of course we loved it. Come on. That was one of the most amazing scenes, the run through the station. The choreography for that thing, I was just talking about it to somebody the other day and making sure that they took a look at that one because they hadn't seen it, and they've seen a lot of the same things that we love. So
unrelated, but related, I have been missing the Kingdom. I really want Kingdom to come back this season.
Yes, yes. I was actually, it was to the same person. So one of my friends had watched Kingdom, and we were talking about the multitude of hats, and as well as the epic storyline, and I brought up Train to Busan at that point. So that is actually the same conversation, and I miss it as well. I cannot wait to see what they come up with next. But anyway, Kevin, thank you for your note. And if anybody else has suggestions, we are happy to take them. We would really love to hear it. It's always cool to hear new material to be able to review. And we haven't done a lot of like reading stuff lately, so maybe we should do that on a longer term thing in our copious spare time.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm honestly, I bought the Walking Dead Typhoon novel in Audible. I go to sleep so soon after I start an Audible that it's pointless. It's like a complete waste of money for me.
I can't listen to that stuff going to bed. I can listen to it on my commute, but like if I try it at night, I'm out. It's like the best thing
it
for
is
going to
such
sleep.
Such a good soporific is a book on tape. It doesn't matter how disturbing the content is.
It's just like
unconscious.
It's like they ripped the flesh from their bones, and I'm like, out.
Yeah. And then like a lullaby.
And then my poor husband is just like, how can you listen to this stuff? Like, so, you know, I've had to dial that back a little bit. But anyway, any other suggestions like content and things like that, we would love to hear it. So drop us a line at some point, and we'll put that at the end, as always, the places to do that. But news, I saw this news story. I almost texted you about this, Stuart, but I'm happy. I'm not shocked that you found it. I was like, oh my goodness.
It's made for us. It's made for us, this story.
So the story that we were talking about is that in the UK, there was like a smaller town.
It's in Holland, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, Netherlands, not the UK, but it could have been the UK. Anyway, in the Netherlands, smaller town, this guy shows up in this pub, basically, looks a little unkempt. The description of the bartender was that his clothes looked like they were from the 80s, had a long beard, basically drank a multitude of beer, and then, like, he kind of disappeared, but he was acting a little strange, came back the next day, and turns out he is a member of this family that was waiting for the end of time. They had a compound. The father is had suffered a stroke, and there's several adult children who'd been basically living, I want to say, outside of his civilization. Like, they had a garden. They had, like, all this stuff where they just – nobody even knew that this family was living out there, apparently, on this – it was like a compound. I mean, they knew that it was there, but nobody had ever seen, like, the family living there. And it's interesting because I think there's more – pieces of this story. There was some kind of a, like, handyman or somebody, like a groundskeeper, that was they have arrested, so maybe he's responsible for keeping them all there, but it really sounds totally bananas. I don't know, man, this is like, there was actually several of them, I think like five people maybe, that were just living in this tiny little room and living, you know, basically isolated from society for years. The mother of this family had died a few years ago. So, but things were sort of locked up. So anybody, like, nobody could sort of dwell on, like, get onto that land accidentally. I guess I always think about in stories like this, that if you've been living in these conditions, isolated, without contact, and you're like adult children, didn't sound like there were minors at this point, but it feels like maybe they had been raised this way.
Yeah, they probably were 9 years ago.
Right.
Other weird parts of the story are that not only is it said that the quote-unquote father is not actually related to any of the other people who live there, he's also, it's not his house.
Oh, so I guess I didn't see that part.
That was in a different story. Like, the mayor of the town was the one reporting this to the local paper.
Oh, I just...
It's super bizarre.
And what I think about, and this happened actually, that there was a family, I think out on the West Coast maybe, or something that's sort of not quite the same thing, but a similar idea. In that case, the parents were keeping the children sort of like isolated and chained up. But
that was in Riverside, California.
Yeah.
Super messed up.
Your side of the world, man. Not Florida, shockingly.
Hey, Southern California, okay?
Not Florida, shockingly. but anyway, in this case, I always wonder, I know in the case with the California family that basically social services came in, but there's like maybe in Europe, there's a little bit more social services and things like that to try to help them reintegrate into society. But you're talking about people that have grown up this way. They're probably just, speaking of overstimulation, like, they have no idea they have no coping mechanisms for sort of what's out there, and everything's so new to them. It's almost like they're time travelers. Maybe they are. I don't know. But I just feel so sad because it's like they're as adults going to have to be eased into things. And it sounds like pretty horrible conditions too, based upon the one that had the one man that had escaped. So I hope it all works out for them. But I just, my heart sunk a little bit when I heard more of this particular story.
Yeah. It's always kind of surprising when it comes out of Europe too. I don't know why it would be like Europe. Mm. It's a normal place, just like everywhere else. There's psychos out there too. So shouldn't be surprised, but it's just troubling when these kinds of stories emerge.
Yeah.
What else we got though?
On a lighter side, there is an Oculus VR Walking Dead game, and the trailer looks pretty insane. I mean at least based upon this trailer, it looks like super cool, but you know, we've kind of seen this before and then it falls down. What did you think of it as being the resident gamer in this particular hosting duo?
I have a couple of caveats, which are, A, I don't trust really well-polished trailers and screenshots, because as we saw with that other one, which I've already forgotten the name, that game, by the way, it's been discontinued. Well, there's Dead Island, that's separate, but the other Walking Dead branded game that we had talked about, they came out with a series of really cool trailers that were in the Walking Dead universe.
Yep, I remember that. The DC game, one, right?
Game comes out, and exactly. There was a DC trailer. Game comes out. It's a complete flop, and it gets pulled by the publisher. I think Skybound or whoever was held the strings was like, "This is not up to our standards." And they, after all the development, they just scrapped it. So this is a VR game, Oculus, Facebook's VR headset. I have not played very much VR. The only headset I've put on belongs to a friend of mine's daughter. She's 10. She has her own VR headset that she saved up her pocket money for. It was pretty cool, honestly. I might want to get one here, especially if there's cool games like Saints and Sinners. But I don't have enough information yet. This is definitely a wait and see after the last debacle.
Okay, fair. The trailer at least looks good, but I also had the same skepticism based upon other things. So
yeah, I mean, anyway, it comes out in a year. That's a pretty short time frame.
Yep.
So we'll see.
So are you ready to jump into Zombieland Double Tap?
I mean, I'm limbered up if that's right. What you're talking about.
Got to do some limbering up, some cardio, get ready, stretching, that kind of thing. Anyway, so Zombieland Double Tap, I saw it in the Nighthawk Theater here in Brooklyn. It was the Thursday night. It was actually oddly, I'm not sure why, it was like in a smaller theater, maybe just because it was opening night. So saw it with a few friends and Bill. And you saw it this weekend at some point last night?
I saw it last night, yeah, which is great. So it's kind of fresh.
Awesome. So the box office already for this is at 26.7 million-ish here in the U.S.
Coming in at number two.
Yeah.
Behind Maleficent is where it's at. So it beat out Joker.
I don't know that anybody could beat out those cheekbones of Angelina Jolie in that particular film. But overall, I'm just wondering for you, overall sort of gut like reaction.
It was a chuckle fest. I was laughing a lot during this film. I'm trying to think of like comparing it. It doesn't really compare very well. Little Monsters. It does not. They're apples and oranges. This is this was funny. I did laugh a lot. It was extremely self-aware and sometimes to its own detriment, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like this was very much a fan service film. I was nervous about this for a variety of reasons before jumping into it. Yeah, and part of this is, I mean, I love that they got the whole cast back. I think that's awesome. And you and I had talked about this a little bit, and we didn't get too much into it probably because I think we both didn't want to reserve our judgment till we actually watched the film. But you know, one of the problems that almost every single sequel has is finding some like original content, finding some storyline that keeps it going, because so much of, you know, the first kind of story, and this is the case with Zombieland, is exposition. And exposition and, you know, sort of building those characters, and some of it's the newness of this. And in this case, you know, we've zoomed forward into the timeline. And one thing that you and I had talked about, which they had revealed, was that they have basically changed a little bit of their zombie canon, in that suddenly there's many different types of zombies, and and that was like, I was troubled by this when we first talked about it. I am no less troubled by it sitting here today.
No less. I would say I am less troubled by it. I think that they executed that pretty okay. Like the Homers were actually one of the funniest things about the movie, and they didn't use them overly much, but every time they were like, oh yeah, it's a Homer, that was a laughable moment, and so I enjoyed that. The others, the Hawkings and the ninjas were used sparingly, and so they didn't really matter, and then they focused a lot on this T-800 version. But at the end of the day, there wasn't a whole lot to, they didn't bring like a lot to the film. But other than in the case of the Homers, they were good for a few laughs, and so I was fine with it.
Well, I know that they had been trying to make a sequel to this for many years, and the scripts kept getting rejected. I still feel like, based upon how tight that first script was and the storytelling, I feel like this is definitely a sequel. There's a lot of good laughs. I think if you like the first one, you're going to be into it. If you like zombie movies, you're going to be into it. And come on, we're talking about a fantastic cast, like Woody Harrelson, Emma Stone, Jesse Eisenberg, and
Abigail Breslin.
And they're all there. Bill Murray also makes a cameo at the end. And then
I
we've
did
got,
not like that cameo.
Let's talk about this. But anyway, like, I felt like even the storyline that they did come up with was relatively weak. It just felt really, really stretching it. And then they added in a lot of funny little things. And
so
I don't know. I just was like, it's kind of what I was expecting, but I guess I was hoping to be wrong. You know what I mean?
So it's difficult. Like you were saying, the problem. So one of the problems with sequels is like character development, and you've already had the character of Columbus and his development, right? From this shut-in, this neurotic shut-in, and how he like gets to know other people and wins the girl at the end of Zombieland.
Yeah.
And so he's already won the girl, and he's already become less of a neurotic. Pretty much still a neurotic, but less of a shut-in, I guess, with Tallahassee and his relationships. So in the second movie, how do you grow that arc? He's still the narrator. He's still the voice, the heart of the film in a way. And I, while maybe he doesn't have much of an arc, it is still interesting because a lot of it is about his love life, a fair amount of it anyway. It's also, in theory, about Abigail Breslin's character, Little Rock, is that her name?
Yep.
But that's where I think the script was weakest, was in her character, because she was only there to be the MacGuffin that they had to figure out.
Right.
And then her situation was not solved. We're spoiling this, by the way, guys, if that wasn't clear. Earmuffs.
Yeah.
Her storyline was not like, her problem that she had at the beginning of the film was still the same problem at the end of the film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like at the beginning of the film, she's lonely. At the end of the film, I guess she's not expressing loneliness, but her situation has now become even more lonely because she's a complete fifth wheel at this point. So I was like, well, how does this... I mean, she has rejected the friends that she made, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was just a little bit like, what was the point of that other than the journey was the destination, which they kind of made that out to be a point of the film, too.
Right.
But for Columbus... I liked his story arc the best, I guess, is the short-winded version of what I'm saying. With all the stuff with Madison and with Wichita.
Yeah, but okay. So Madison is a newer character that they introduced.
I loved
by Zoe Deutsch, and I did not because I don't like the dumb female trope. But I thought that she played it to the hilt and well, and it was funny. And the absolute opposite of Emma Stone's character. I loved that dynamic. Mm-hmm. That was pretty awesome. But I just don't like that particular trope generally. So, but you know, they played it to the hilt. She's like all dressed in pink and athleisure. She's the antithesis of their entire team and philosophy. So,
what did you think of the Thomas Middleditch, Luke Wilson?
I mean, it was kind of a funny thing, and it didn't last very long, so I thought that was kind of fun.
It is good that it didn't last very long.
Yeah, but they did, so that's why I don't object to it that much, because it was really a very brief part of it. It's not like they continued that joke. They just kind of did it, then they were gone, you know? There was the whole Elvis sort of focal point of this, and again, we're ruining this, but part of the whole thing is that you know, Tallahassee has talked about going to Graceland for so long, and Little Rock, that's kind of where she decides to go. Because, you know, and that's somewhat of an homage to Tallahassee and her relationship with him. Although, kind of sad that she's trying to do with Adam. But, you know, they're going off to Graceland, and Graceland's, you know, totally trashed. But then there's the Hound Dog Hotel, which apparently is right near Graceland. This is an operation run by Rosario Dawson. It's got all these Elvis things. And apparently
in Nevada.
Right. But the thing is that I was listening. So they've been doing the rounds probably because this is out. And Woody Harrelson was on Marc Maron. And apparently there is a story that he tells in Zombieland Double Tap that is actually from his real life. So
oh wait, the one where he got on the table?
Yep.
Oh, no kidding.
So actually, he was on the football team in high school. He started to do this in the library, and he did an Elvis impersonation. Everybody gathered around. They're all cheering him on. And this very popular girl who was like
top. Did he actually name drop the real girl?
He did. And she approached him and actually told, instead of telling him, giving just the kiss part, told him he should join the drama team, which is how he got into acting.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing.
So I thought that was kind of awesome.
I felt like as much as they broke the fourth wall in this movie with their subtitles or superimposed titles, they should have just done that there somehow.
Right.
True story. You know, actual Woody Harrelson true story or something. I don't know.
And I do recommend this interview with him. It was really, he's just really, like, he sounds really sweet, but it was a pretty interesting conversation. And so he starts telling that story and Pill's like, oh my gosh, it was a real story. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Now, Bill saw this movie with you?
Yeah. Yeah. He enjoyed it.
Well, but played.
But agreed that it was not, he enjoyed the first one more, so.
So let's talk a little bit about the subtitles or those titles that they throw up. I mean, this is something that they did in the first movie with his rules,
yeah,
like cardio, etc. And they especially when he meets Flagstaff, his bizarro self.
Yep.
They really go after it with because Flagstaff has commandments versus Columbus's rules, and yeah. So what was your take on all of that?
I mean, it was kind of silly. It was, that was part of the joke, was that this, the, you know, that there's like doppelgangers basically in Zombieland. I thought that was fine. Again, you know, part of what made the first film so successful and interesting was that the editing was done really well. And the way that they use these graphics and all of that kind of thing was just so seamless and fast moving. And this just felt, to me, it felt a little tired.
It was fast. And that was one of the things that, well, yes, and I agree that it was a little tired too. But the fact that it was still slick. Like when Woody Harrelson's character, Tallahassee, is like, maybe I should have a rule. And then it briefly pops up. And then he's like, ah, no, I don't, whatever. I don't care about rules. And then it like suddenly disappears. But almost all the titles also now had like some sort of graphical element. Like The World is Your Bathroom. And there was like pee coming off of the graphic. Yeah. Yeah. They obviously put a lot of effort into these and not in just a cheesy way.
Yeah. You know, I think that the actors themselves had a lot of chemistry. It's clear that they really enjoyed making this and that they enjoyed doing this together. They, you know, you do feel like the band got back together. So that was a lot of fun. I do think that part of what I loved about the first film that I wish they had somehow done something a little bit better here. Was the whole community that they come across. And I do think that Zoe Deutsch...
Baby Lawn?
The Baby Lawn made me laugh so hard. Her delivery was just impeccable.
Every time she talked, I was like...
So good.
When she accidentally discovers sarcasm.
Yes!
I was dying.
And then she asks if it's sarcasm. Oh, so amazing. but, you know, I wish that the peaceful little... community. I mean, part of what made the other film sort of successful is that the people who survived were the people that maybe like Columbus or maybe like Tallahassee, like there were different ways to survive. And, you know, I don't know that
Madison was never one of them.
Right. And I just don't think that this community would have gotten off the ground, let alone be this successful thing. Even the setup seemed a little ridiculous. So it just like, I feel like there was a way they could potentially have tweaked this. And I know that they just didn't, obviously this is a silly film where they didn't want to get into Walking Dead serious territory. It's a ridiculous film. And that's kind of where they went here.
But you're right. Between Madison and Babylon and Berkeley and all of them, they don't make a whole lot of sense in the continuum.
Well, especially when in the beginning you're seeing like all the people getting eaten who are like these people. So you're just kind of like, how would they have survived this? Well, no way.
And the two interludes they did for Zombie Kill of the Day, which were kind of interesting. Like, you know, they would cut away to a farmer on a combine harvester or like that guy in Italy, for instance, really interesting, like unnecessary, completely unnecessary, but like so much flavor, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of enjoyed this.
But yeah, like, so that was a little troubling, but ultimately it's about like this team and the ridiculousness of this movie. So it was definitely a romp, and there was like a lot of good laughs. But I just didn't enjoy it as much as the first one, and it's a sequel, so that doesn't shock me.
That's really tough. How do you remember puking being so much of an element of turning into a zombie?
Yes. But they focused a little bit. The girl
from apartment 406.
Yeah, she did this. She did this, and this was like the whole thing was that it was like this weird, unnatural thing. Because it was obviously something was very, very wrong. But you know, the whole nut allergy with Madison was like making that a thing was funny.
Pretty funny.
And you know, I did like ultimately, I did like how like they ended this, and I loved, you know, Woody Harrelson is great, and he was really just, he looks fantastic, by the way. I think he looks amazing. And this was just like, I felt like they had a fun romp together. I enjoyed it, but I was just like, I guess I was just hoping they would take this one step further or somehow not have it be what it turned into or what it was. But not, like, I think if you enjoy zombie films, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
It's like a fun movie to watch with a group of people, I guess.
I think if you enjoyed Zombieland, you're going to enjoy this. It's just, you're not going to think that it's like the second coming.
Right.
Of Zombieland. It's a sequel that cannot live up to the first one, but it's still a lot of fun to watch. And even when they get to the third act, and the third act is just a lot of like set pieces about killing lots of zombies and fireworks, mm-hmm. you're still going to have jokes like, hey, no group sex. Okay, group sex kind of jokes, you know, which they're peppered in there, you know, in a really nice way. It's not like Madison has to pull all the jokes. She does enough of them. But there are plenty of other jokes going around that are still really good, including, I don't think they're still talking about her driveway. Like, just, it never ends. Like, I was having a lot of fun. Maybe it's a little too infantile and, like, appealing to the 13-year-old man, 13-year-old boy's sense of humor. I don't know if that's where you feel like this movie was off track.
No, I mean, I just felt like it was wandering a little bit, and it just felt a little bit like it was a stretch. Like, to me, the whole storyline was a stretch.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, they comment even on their awareness of how different the world is now. There's like definitely some references to Me Too and like different things like that. And you
know, the whole conversation about Uber.
Yep, that was amazing. So I thought that there were some pretty funny things that they threw in, and that were definitely like they were laugh out loud moments.
So when it was self aware, it was self aware, not always in a bad way.
No,
but sometimes it felt a little bit too much like wink wink. I'm looking at you, audience, and not enough. So it kept you out of the. This is not a movie that you're going to go and like forget you're watching a movie and like be wrapped in the story. This is definitely a movie where it's like you're holding hands with the cast and we're all making jokes together.
Right. Well, and I guess that's my thing, is that there isn't really that much of a story, or it's kind of a weak one at that. So, but again, fun, and not like, I'm not complaining about it. It's a sequel. So, and I think we need to talk, I mean, that's why a sequel is so hard, is because especially with a film like Zombieland, what they did was such an original thing, even if it's based on, you know, old things, like zombie, they had their own canon, they had their own, like, set of, you know, the way that they were doing things was with the graphics, everything was just really tight. But it is very hard for lightning to hit twice in terms of something like this, because it's a sequel. So that was, you know, and then the question is then, well, why did they do this? And I think that people were just so excited about Zombieland that they felt like there should be a sequel. And I think they really loved the cast. And this cast definitely had fun in the first film. I feel like they absolutely had a ball in this one. And, you know, so it's definitely worth seeing. And some of the friends that we were with commented that this would be a great film to just see, like, as a lark, you know, with a fun night with a bunch of friends, you know. Mm-hmm. It's got like that sense of humor. It's fun. It's just silly. So But that's all I really have in general.
So talk to me about Bill Murray's cameo.
Okay, I guess we should talk about that. I didn't want to do that.
It's lengthy. Felt long. It was probably 3 to 5 minutes long.
Right.
And it comes up after the first credits start rolling.
Yeah.
A lot of people had already stood up in the theater, and then suddenly Jesse Eisenberg comes back. He's like, hang on, wait a sec. Because they make a reference to Murraying somebody.
Yeah. and whatever. So obviously Bill Murray can't actually be back because he was killed in the first film. So Jesse Eisenberg basically is like talks about they reference it in Double Tap, and then during the credits is like, hey, so you know I feel bad about that, so we're gonna give you this, and what they give us is basically footage from when the Zombieland happened the first time around and Bill Murray, and they, I don't know if you noticed it, but throughout there was like several places where they had Garfield like little posters, especially in the mall with Madison.
Oh, I did not notice that.
So the whole thing was like there's like a lot of like teasing Bill Murray about Garfield, and in this case he's supposedly doing the circuit for his interview circuit for his Garfield 3, I guess, film. And they got like Al Roker. They got like a lot of people for this. This was like in a very intense cameo.
Al Roker was the first, was like maybe Patient Zero, except it obviously was like simultaneously hitting a lot of people, but Al Roker.
But he was one of many. They had like all these pretty famous people, just totally turning, and Bill Murray rocking it and like destroying everybody. Which, you know, this is before he ends up in his mansion and all that kind of thing. But it's hard for me to not like this because I love Bill Murray so much. So I was happy to see him. I'm happy to see that they did this, but it did feel like a very strange add-on. But, you know, I'm not complaining too much. What did you think? Clearly you didn't like it.
I guess that was kind of like too much icing at that point in the movie. When, like, as you said at the beginning of our conversation, it was fan service, this movie. And this feels like fan service on top of fan service, you know? So they just served this up like, hey, this is... And he even is like, hey, I felt bad, so here's this.
Yeah.
It's like, what? And then I didn't love... Yeah, just it felt weird. It wasn't interesting.
It did feel a little weird. But I also think that it was... I'm just never going to not like Bill Murray at all.
Yeah.
So, anywho. But it is, you know, it's one of those things where I guess that, like, you can't really have a Zombieland movie without him. Come on. Well, I guess you could have.
Definitely have a zombie movie without Bill Murray.
Zombieland
movie. Yeah. Definitely. So I think that they will not probably make a Zombieland 3. I don't think that they should.
Same. Agree.
I still think they should not try to make that TV show that they tried to make on Amazon Prime that we watched the pilot for and got booed out of existence.
Yeah.
And so I think we're good. I think we have Zombielanded to our Zombieland maximum, and we're okay now. Everybody's fine.
Yep. I think everybody's got their fill. It's set. And that's that. But what would you like to talk about next week?
I think next time we should take a very bold step into a dubious quality film.
Sweet.
By the name of I Am Alone.
Hmm.
From 2017.
Okay. Absolutely. That sounds all right. Good.
I love it when you're all game for these like very likely less than B quality films that I make you watch.
Well, I like some of the B-quality films. I always think it's interesting, especially if it's like, I don't know, a lower budget project. I mean, that's what the fun part of some of this stuff is just kind of seeing what people do and how they execute it. And sometimes the good parts are the bad parts, you know, like if it's like super cheesy, that's enjoyable. And it's enjoyable to complain about it.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Well, great. So we'll watch that one for next time. For anybody who would like to send us suggestions or anything that you'd like to hear us review, drop us a line at reanimated@gmail.com. leave us a note on Twitter, which is Reanimated PCast, or just leave a note or put something in our show, like on our show website, which is reanimatedpodcast.com. I got there eventually.
You were there.
I was there.
I was there.
But until next time, ciao.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and bye-bye.